language Inuktitut. Please join me as we move forward, Kayushtiluta, to another great interview in the next episode, because our people are doing amazing things for our languages. Atsunai!
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e ninen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kakawuddao. We'll see you again.
This is Bird Note. I'm Jonice Franklin, Bird Note's content director. One thing we love to hear at Bird Note is when educators and parents are able to use the show as a teaching tool, like Bird Note listener Kim Bradman.
One thing I like about Bird Note is the length, short little bites. I even use it in the kindergarten classroom. When I have like a really nice coloring sheet that they can watercolor paint of a bird, I'll play a Bird Note of that bird. You get some little factoid that kids and adults both enjoy.
After listening to Bird Note with her kids, Kim has seen their bird knowledge and her own begin to grow.
I just see them noticing more. We'll try to name the birds outside the window at the feeder, and we're trying to learn the calls a little bit more. It's kind of a way to both appreciate the birds, but also see the growth in yourself.
Her son Ben is adding more bird calls to his repertoire.
I can imitate a mourning dove. I just like birds. I like everything about them.
Bird Note has helped you learn more about the birds around you. So support the show with a donation at birdnote.org.
For Bird Note, this is Ben Bradman.
And I'm Kim Bradman. Bird Note is the bridge between generations of conservationists.
If you love birds like I do, I hope you'll make a donation to Bird Note today.
Support this work at birdnote.org.
Hey, I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.
Emlumgook First Nation hosted its second ever youth powwow on Saturday with activities moved into the Dorchester Veterans Community Center to avoid rain.
All right, so we're good to go. So whenever you're ready, super boy.
People packed into the hall to witness the grand entry, featuring youth dancers from Emlumgook and around New Brunswick, as well as local leaders, including Emlumgook Chief Rebecca Knockwood, Cultural Coordinator Nicole Porter, incumbent MLA Megan Mitten, and Tantramar Mayor Andrew Black. The powwow started off with a moment of reflection for the crowd, to consider and honor the lives of children who suffered in Canada's residential schools and day school system. Emotions ran high as the crowd listened to the song Remember Me, written by residential school survivor Randy Wood, as toddlers and young children ran around among parents and caregivers. Elder Cynthia Sewell welcomed the crowd with the Mi'kmaq honor song and two youth drum groups, Thunderfeather from Wagmacook and Cebu Boys from Metabanagiag, took turns providing the heartbeat for the gathering. CHMA caught up with Amlamcook Chief Rebecca Knockwood shortly after the grand entry.
This is a second year of this event here. It's becoming a real, it's growing.
Yes, correct. Yes, it brings my heart so much joy to know that it's growing. I mean, it's sad that we had to have it indoors today, but we accommodated and everybody's just happy to be here. And I love seeing the children and it's just awesome.
Now, I got to say, you know, during the Remember Me song, you could feel the emotion coming across the room.
Yeah.
I gather, you know, from your words that there's two sides to it. There's also a lot of joy that you feel at an event like this, but you are remembering painful things as well.
Yeah. Remembering those children that in those unmarked graves and those first 215 they found. I do believe that's how that song came to be, Remember Me. And yeah, I cried when I heard it because it gets me so emotional thinking about all those little kids that never had a chance to come back home. Like, they don't get to see their mom say I love you, give them hugs, kisses them at night, read them books and stuff. It's really, really sad, but it's also fulfilling and happy to know that we have the little generation coming up, the younger ones coming up.
It feels like with events like this, we're turning a corner a bit.
Yes, it is. We are certainly turning a corner for sure, and it heals your heart for me.
Would you say, I mean, Fort Folly is a small First Nation. I don't know. Is it the smallest in New Brunswick?
No. No. It's a small size, yes, for acreage, but no, we're the second smallest.
All right. And would you say that it certainly feels like there's a lot happening at Fort Folly. It's a hive of activity, environmentally, culturally. Obviously you've been at the helm of this. Like, what do you see? And, you know, looking forward the next few years for Amlamcook First Nation.
I see growth and I see opportunity for our members. Like, we recently just built a seniors home for our elders to come, and that's where they're living. We have several elders in there right now, and it's just, they feel so, to me, when I see them and they're happy, they know that people care and are looking out for them. So, and I do what I do for the next seven generations. So, yeah, we're growing. We may be small, but we're growing. We're mighty.
Anything else you want to share with folks in radio land here?
You're missing a good powwow right now. Next year, it'll be even bigger and better. Hopefully we'll be able to hold it outdoors within the community, and just look forward to seeing everybody next year.
That's Chief Rebecca Knockwood of Amlamcook First Nation speaking to CHMA Saturday during the second Amlamcook Youth Powwow held in the Dorchester Veterans Memorial Center. This is Erica Butler reporting for CHMA Sackville and the Local Journalism Initiative.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Today we're sitting down in conversations with Sarah Jones. We're chatting about an upcoming documentary release available for your viewing pleasure on TELUS Optik, YouTube, the internet, etc., entitled Finding Home. It details journey with Sarah and her family and exploring the history of her own mother and the impact of the 60s scoop on their family. For those unfamiliar with the concept of the 60s scoop, between 1965 and up to 1984, child welfare authorities in Canada forcibly removed thousands of Indigenous children from their families and communities. They placed the children in foster care or adopted them out to non-Indigenous families. This action was known as the 60s scoop, and at the time there was a myth that Indigenous children were better off growing up away from their family, language, and culture, a belief often accepted in mainstream society at the time. We're in a place now in 2024 where we like to think that that belief has shifted away, that we know better now. We've learned from our mistakes. One of the harder questions to ask you in the course of our conversation, Sarah, do you feel we really have moved on as a society from these beliefs, or does some of them still pervade our day-to-day existence now in our contemporary culture? Are we still there, stuck in this mentality?
Yeah, I think to answer the first part of the question, we are definitely as a society recognizing that the loss of culture and forced assimilation definitely causes problems for people. It causes a lot of emotional distress. It causes it changes who you are as a person. And to have that kind of taken away from people and an entire race of people really does have a lot of detrimental impacts later on for the future generations. So that is good. I think we're having these conversations and people are starting to understand we want to right these wrongs. However, it's still today, like the number of Indigenous children in foster homes is higher than what it was at the peak of the 60s scoop. And I think that speaks to the breakdown of family. And this is a real statistic that proves to us that there's still an issue that needs to be sorted out. So talking about these topics, I think, is just the beginning. And like, we're starting to shed some light on it. And I think we still have a lot of work to do. But for me personally, it's nice that we're finally having these conversations at least. But there's still a lot of work to be done, in my opinion.
I'm curious, were any of the tenets within the Truth and Reconciliation recommendations what informed or motivated you to pursue this topic? Was sharing this story part of your own efforts to get the truth out there, the truth part of TRC?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, again, truth and reconciliation is something that gets talked about more frequently now than ever before. So that is a great start. And yeah, for me personally, prior to starting this documentary and prior to the movement of truth and reconciliation, like I didn't really have a lot of, I guess, like ideas, or like I felt like maybe I was singled out. Like I have these really strong opinions. I'm really angry and frustrated about a lot of the things that have happened in my family. But is that just a me problem? But truth and reconciliation has shown me, like this movement has shown me that this is an issue across the country with hundreds and thousands of people, with lots of families. So I would definitely say truth and reconciliation gave me kind of like the fuel that I needed to be like, okay, this is an issue that I'm experiencing, that it goes beyond me. This is bigger than how I'm feeling. This is actually an impact of what's happened in the past. So I definitely think with that and some of the findings and the statistics through reporting that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission did definitely opened up my eyes to like, this is a real problem. And it kind of gave me validation to tell my story, if that makes sense.
It certainly does. And you sharing your own story, I'm hoping will also help people to feel less isolated and lonely in their own experience as well. You said you were suffering alone with yourself and your family in this, with this knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. And like feeling maybe that my emotions weren't valid in how I was feeling. So I'm really thankful that these conversations are happening. And if my story can help somebody else maybe feel validated in their story and to talk about it further with, you know, with their own lives or their own families. Like that's one of my main goals with this project, was to maybe just help somebody else understand that they're not alone in this either. You know, like I know that this story is unique to my family, but it's not unique to me necessarily. Like this is a story that probably a lot more people have than we realize.
What kind of apprehensions did you have to overcome in order to have these really difficult conversations with your family? What was that like?
Yeah, there were some hard questions definitely that I had to ask throughout production, particularly when I had conversations with my mom and my grandma. Those ones were the most difficult for me. And I was most apprehensive about asking my mom questions that might upset her, because a lot of this was like based in the past. And a lot of this stuff that I actually uncovered was new information that my mom wasn't really aware of. So I was really scared of maybe upsetting her or hurting her feelings or asking questions that might, pose as like a contradiction, And same thing with my grandma. When I went to interview her and ask her questions, I was afraid that maybe me dipping into this part of my past might be something that, you know, would upset her as well. And like, so when I speak about my grandma, she's my mom's foster mother. So I've known her, my grandma, my whole life, but we aren't biological. And I think that has always scared my grandma a little bit, like reaching into our family roots. Is that going to take us away from her? Things like that. So I was just really worried about hurting my family's feelings if anything came up. But thankfully, everyone was so great with answering questions. And then I was also apprehensive, too, a bit about these are topics of conversation that cause some controversy for people. And I didn't want to open up a conversation and have conflict or be met with backlash. So I was a little scared of that, but it needed to be done. So I just kept with that in the back of my head. Like, I just need to move past the things that I think are going to be damaging, you know, like I just had to keep going. So that's what I did.
I feel like most of us really try to avoid family conflict as much as possible. Enough is already present in so many of our family dynamics, right? But to pursue that really is a brave thing to do. So I commend you on that one anyway. And one of the interesting things about the Telus Optic documentary production series is it's very open. You can kind of choose anything. Like, I could choose to do a documentary about all the great things about Styrofoam. But instead, you got this grant and you chose to pursue your family story, right? How long have these questions been hanging over you? When do you think you were like, I need to know more about this because I just don't know?
Yeah, good question. I really started to question more about life and like myself and where I come from. I think when I became a mom for the second time. So my baby, my daughter is going to be 3 in January. And it was when I was pregnant with her, like I had a lot of downtime where I was thinking about like, what do I want for the future? It was also during COVID when I was pregnant. So it was like, what do I want my kids to take away from life? What do I want them to know? And I started questioning that, but I didn't know even any of those answers for myself. So it was like, I really started to question things, I think, when motherhood came to me again the second time. And I just wanted to, you know, reflect on what I want to pass down to my children. And I think our stories are really important. And I wanted to know more about me and who I wanted to become. And yeah, so definitely motherhood, I think, is what sparked that. And then just a lot of downtime during COVID when I just had a lot of time to think, I guess.
You had the benefit of having some multi-generational members of your family present during the filming of this documentary. Is there anyone that you didn't get to talk to that you wished you could have talked to?
Yeah, absolutely. So throughout the documentary, I focused a lot on my mom's biological father. His name is Charlie. He is no longer with us. He has since passed away. But I did get to spend some time with him when he was here. And I would have really have liked to have asked him a lot of questions about what he was experiencing during that time when my mom was placed into foster care, and like what his journey was from a more personal perspective. So I really wish I could have had a conversation with him, because when he was alive, we didn't really talk about this. Like, he knew that we reconnected and he knew that my mom was his and that she had been placed into foster care, but it was never a conversation of she was a 60 scoop survivor. Because even then, when this is back in 2003, 2004, that these conversations weren't even happening. So it was real for us, but we didn't really know what we were talking about then. And now we do. So I wish I had more questions. I could have talked to him to get more perspective from him.
Were there any, I don't know, archival resources or anything like that you came across in the process of this that you're like, oh, I wish I could have accessed this years ago? Or maybe anything that you would recommend people who want to know more to find out about their own families, their own situations?
Yeah, actually. So when I started compiling information for the documentary, like pre-production, I found a lot of actually like documentaries that have already been made kind of on these topics. Some of them as far back as like 1984, which is crazy because I felt like I was, you know, making this documentary that was so groundbreaking and new and nobody was talking about it, to see these documentaries like on these same topics already in place that are over 30 years old. I was excited to find it, but also kind of frustrated because it's like we Indigenous people have been having these conversations for 30 plus years, and I feel like not a lot has really changed in that time. So there was a few really good documentaries, one in particular that I would recommend for listeners. It's called Richard Cardinal, The Cry of a Métis Child, and it's about a 60 scoop child that the producer takes the findings of his journal and turns it into a documentary. And it was really good. It was incredible. Like, and I felt like it was, again, validating what I was doing and made me feel more like this is something I need to pursue. And then the other thing that I found, there's a lot of information on my grandpa, which was pretty cool because he was a very well-respected elder in his community. So I stumbled across some of his old work. There was like a YouTube video and like archived conversations that a museum in Alberta had about him. So it was really cool. And so I encourage anybody that's maybe wanting to do digging for their own, like just start asking questions. The internet is a great place to start and just kind of go from there, I guess. And then a few other resources that were really good, like even just accessing the public library, they were super helpful. There was a couple books that they just like ordered for me that I could rent through the library. That's probably most of it.
Also, in your personal life here in Prince George, Caliente area, you're also known as a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Within your set, I noticed some of your humor is fantastic too. You have the important life skill mm-hmm. of being able to make lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah.
Did you find any aspect of humor in this story that you just weren't expecting to come across? Did you end up having some laughs with your family that you just didn't see coming?
Yes, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked that question because my comedy endeavor only started in March of 2023, so I would say it's fairly new. Almost that timeline is fairly parallel to the timeline of the project Finding Home documentary. And I think that is because talking about my healing journey, it kind of just gave me this like confidence that I didn't know that I had. And reconnecting with my Indigenous identity also brought upon this sense of I know who I am now. So that really helped just like be creative and want to write jokes and like things that really used to make me angry or like sad. I could talk about them on stage, but like throw in a little element of humor so I can get people to listen to what I have to say, but I can say it in a funny enough way that you can't help but listen. Like you kind of have to because you're laughing. And if you're laughing, you're listening. So there was that. And then there was actually a lot of really good laughs throughout production with my mom and my grandma during interviews. And one of my favorite moments was, so my grandma Sylvia, she's an incredible woman. I owe a lot of where I get my humor or where to find the funny because of her. And one shot that we did, my grandma had mentioned to me, because she, throughout her life, she was a foster parent. She took in four foster children that she had for their entire lives, and they're still in her life. And she had two of her own biological children. So my grandmother had six children altogether, and each of a different racial background. So my mom, in particular, is Indigenous, and then her foster brother is Indigenous and Chinese, and then Indigenous and Mexican, so several different backgrounds. And so my grandma told me that when she used to walk through town, they used to live in Ladner, BC, there was this joke that here comes Sylvia and the United Nations. And to some people that might be like offensive, but for us, like that's so funny. Like it's this perspective, but it's true. And my grandma hadn't mentioned that before, and we had a really good laugh. And I just owe it to her, I think, a lot to being able to find the humor in life, because you kind of have to, you know?
Absolutely. This is a complex story of family, but love itself is complicated. What do you feel like you took away from learning about the intricacies and complexities of human-human relationships mm-hmm. and how we can learn how to treat one another maybe a little better?
Absolutely.
In hard times.
We actually talk about that near the end of the series. In one of the end of the episodes, I have this conversation about love and like the power that it actually has. And I know it sounds cheesy and we all talk about, oh, if we all loved each other a little more and we could do this, we could change the world. But it really, it is true. And my family is a testament of that. My mom actually wrote in a book as well, talking about this, how the love from her mother, her foster mom, I hate using that word because I've never seen her as anything different, but they aren't biological and they aren't blood. But my grandma loved my mom unconditionally. And my grandma also writes about that as well. And she talks about how giving her piece of her heart to her children and taking a piece of theirs in return is what makes you family. And how this, like, the power of love can really truly make the difference in somebody's life. You know, my mom experienced a lot of hardships in her life, and if she didn't have that unconditional love from her mother where she could go back and still be loved and welcomed and taken care of, like, that was really powerful to actually see that happening when I was editing, because I was blind to it before. Like, we talk about love, but you don't really, like, see it every single day or experience it every day. But then when I looked at it, like, the way my grandma loved my mom is the way my mom loves me, and it's the way I love my children, and it's very powerful, and it's lasted through all of these generations. So I think the message that I got was that family can be made, and you can do good things and lift each other up if you truly know how to love each other without conditions. And that comes across in the documentary. And that's actually one of my favorite parts about the documentary, is how I just kind of, like, you find the love and make it, made the story good, because the situation of the story is very sad, but love is kind of like what saves it, you know? And so, yeah, I'm really glad that I got to finally see that. Like, I was blind to it before this process, and it's brought my family closer, like, knowing I just have my mom who loves me unconditionally, my grandma who loves me unconditionally, and passing that down to my children, you know. So yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Sarah. It sounds like the classic story of the triumph of love over tragedy.
Yeah.
In your documentary release, mm-hmm. of Finding Home, available on Telus Optic through the Telus website, and therefore also on YouTube. And you can also listen to the pure audio version here on CFUR 88.7 FM.
So it's 6 episodes, and each one ranges roughly from like 20 to 30 minutes, but it's 150 minutes in total.
And Sarah, thank you for being so vulnerable. Thank you for coming in. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
Katie. You want some cool new music to listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang out with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.